Good morning. Well, this morning, I'm going to talk to you a little while about another practice instruction from our Zen ancestor, Hongzhi. Do you folks have the... You do, it looks like, the program. So I'd like to start this morning, if you will indulge me, by reading this short paragraph together. Shall we recite it together? If you have it in front of you, you can just read it, and if you want to look over the shoulder of your neighbor, that would be fine. And if you cannot do either, just bluff. This piece has been given the title The Resting of the Streams and Tides. So let's just read this together. Just resting is like the great ocean accepting hundreds of streams, all absorbed into one flavor. Freely going ahead is like the great surging tides riding on the wind, all coming onto this shore together. How could they not reach into the genuine source? How could they not realize the great function that appears before us? A patch-robed monk follows movement and responds to changes in total harmony. Moreover, haven't you yourself established the mind that thinks up all the illusory conditions? This insight must be perfectly incorporated. Thank you. I think reciting and chanting is a really important part of our tradition. Chanting especially, because it's kind of like singing. I think there's something about hearing Dharma coming out of your mouth. That's actually really important. We're used to things coming in from the outside, and I think it's really important to hear it coming from inside out. That it's your voice that gets to speak Dharma, you know, and that you hear these ancient words coming out of your mouth, you know, being formed with your lips, your breath, your life. You know, they're yours, right? They don't belong to anyone else. So hearing them, experiencing them, coming from the inside out, I think is really important. It's part of kind of how we embody our tradition and accept it as ours. You know, it isn't being borrowed or taken from someone else. And it isn't always coming from the outside going in. It's coming from the inside and coming out. So, I don't know. Have you ever had that experience of reading something and kind of going, oh, man, I knew that. I've always known that. You know, this is a familiar thing to me. I didn't know that I knew it, but I knew it. Like, of course it's yours. So, it's a good practice for us. So, I'm going to do what I usually do. This is my favorite way of giving a talk, picking some little bit like this and then just playing with it. I love doing that. I'm not sure why, but I love it. Picking apart the words and picking apart the order in which these instructions were given. One of the things I'm aware of is how our relationship with the written word has changed. And these days I can sit down and open my laptop and type out a piece like this in, you know, 30 seconds and send it off to you with very, very little thought. And a lot of my emails read that way. Very little thought, right? But when this was written, it would have involved finding a large piece of papyrus, would have involved an inkstone, and it would have involved a brush, and it would have involved making ink, which takes several minutes. It would have involved wetting the brush, laying out the paper. It would have involved composing this very, very carefully because, you know, writing is expensive, actually. takes a lot of time. It's expensive. And whatever it is you've deemed worth writing down kind of automatically has had to jump through many, many hoops that these days we don't have to. I can type out any goofy thing I want to this day and age. But something like this would have been something that would have come from a pretty deep place in someone, we can assume, because it would have taken a lot of effort to create it. So, in my eyes anyway, it's worth spending this kind of time with. So when I feel kind of funny about, oh man, you're going over that piece again, you know, it's like, well, come on man, somebody probably spent a long time on this. There must be something there for me. So anyway, I'll walk through it today and I'll just offer you my own thoughts. And as I often say before doing this type of activity, my thoughts and feelings in response to Dharma is exactly that, just my thoughts and my feelings. But if Dharma comes from the inside out, then your thoughts and your feelings are far more important. And hopefully everything we're talking about today just gets you closer to that, gets you more aware of what's moving inside of you in response to this, not what I think. Does that make sense? Kinda? Okay. So what does he say? Well, Hongzhi is one of our Chinese ancestors. This piece was probably written in the 1100s. This is part of something he would have called practice instructions. So this short, what we would call a paragraph, is essentially intended for a monastic community. And this, I mean, entitling a practice instruction, this is sort of his version of giving you something very, very practical to hang on to during your Zazen and during Zen practice. This is like him being practical. I mean, that's funny, you guys, because this is a hilariously impractical piece. But when you read all of his stuff, you're like, no, that's actually about as close to left brain as this guy gets. It's very, very poetic. It's very, very abstract. It's very, very metaphorical. So he starts by saying, just resting is like the great ocean accepting hundreds of streams, all absorbed into one flavor. We could probably spend a whole practice period on that sentence. Just resting. Just resting. That's the way our Zazen is oftentimes described. Just sitting. Shikantaza. Just resting. Is the way our traditions meditation is oftentimes described. The doing nothingness. And yet, his word choice here kind of suggests it's pretty active. A pretty active just resting. Because just resting is the great ocean accepting hundreds of streams, all absorbed into one flavor. That accepting has to come before the absorption into one flavor. We really want to skip from just resting to one flavor. And the accepting is the hard part for us. So, lest we stay too abstract, you are sitting Zazen, and you are following the instructions given to us by our ancestors. You are just sitting. You've arranged your garments, and you've crossed your legs, and you've found a nice long spine, and you feel balanced and poised. You've connected to your breath. You've connected to your body. Ah, Zazen. You know the mission, right? Accept all of the streams. Notice what comes. Let it come in. And then anger shows up. I don't want to accept that one. I'm here to be a good Buddhist. I'll just say no to that. No one's ever going to notice. Not even me. A little bit of fear comes up. Am I doing it right? There's a stream I would prefer not to accept. I won't let that one in either. No one will ever know. Not even me. When I go meet with my teacher in a little while, I'm going to tell him how peaceful I feel. Doubt comes up. Memories come up. Sadness comes up. Separation comes up. Grief comes up. Anxiety comes up. Do you feel how active now Zazen has become? Because our instruction, this is a practice instruction, except the streams. When sadness shows up in this human heart, what does accepting look like? Naming it and going back to the breath? Or does it look like feeling it? I would suggest to you that if the heart of this thing we call Mahayana Buddhism for the past 2,000 years is compassion, that without feeling it, I am dead. And I'm certainly not practicing Zen. I'm not accepting anything. I'm saying no to part of my experience. And it's awfully easy to say no to that, because I say no to that all the time. I say no to the experience of afflictive thought. I say no to the experience of afflictive feeling. I say no to the experience of memory, trauma, difficulty, struggle, resistance, constriction, all the time. Right? I call this personality. I call it ego. It's my defenses against the pain. Right? I'm not unique in that way. I'm in very good company. There are 7 billion of us very busily defending ourselves against the difficulty of the experience of being alive. Does that sound familiar? I hope. For those of you listening at home, everyone in the room just nodded. What's the first noble truth of Buddhism? What's the core of our tradition? Right? Human life involves a tremendous amount of struggle and suffering. It's really hard to be a human. Consciousness and form. It's tough. This is tough. What's the second noble truth of Buddhism? Where does that suffering come from? Our wishing it was different. Our fighting against it. Our resistance to it. They're just naming what's happening all of the time. It hurts and I don't want it to. It hurts and I don't want it to. It hurts and I don't want it to. And how we turn pain into suffering. By not accepting the stream. By not accepting the stream. By not accepting the stream. Does that make sense? Zazen becomes this incredibly sacred container where I get 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes to watch how I don't accept the streams in and then make a choice. To make a choice, a different choice. A choice that's about healing, that's about expansion, that's about wisdom. A choice to feel something that's real, that will ultimately help me connect to you. Because there is only one suffering. It's yours, it's mine, it's ours. Wow, do you feel the possibility there of actual connection to not only my experience but to yours, to everything? Wow, accept that stream. Oh my goodness, what a high bar. We're on the first sentence still, you guys. Just resting, and that sounded so good. Oh, just resting. Oh, that's the kind of meditation I signed up for. But a few words later, accepting. Good grief. I was overseas recently and I saw a sign in a window. I wish I would have taken a picture of that, because I don't know if it was a yoga store or maybe it was a yoga studio. But anyway, the sign said, "Rise above your troubles in our meditation lounge." And I was just like, that is spectacular. Rise above your troubles in our meditation lounge. And I was like, God, it's Zen Center. We are doing it all wrong. We've been doing it all wrong for 45 years, you guys. We're not rising above anything. We're going down into it and being brave enough to feel it and actually care. Right? Zazen's not about rising above anything. And then when I got to the lounge part, I'm like, we're really messing it up. We're never lounging here. Oh, my God, you guys. Just resting is like the great ocean, accepting hundreds of streams, all absorbed into one flavor. Oh. So just resting, that's Zazen, right? That is your life. Whether you're sitting upright with crossed legs, or whether you're starting your car, or whether you're composing an email, whether you're doing your laundry, that is your life. That great ocean is mind. It is what you truly are. It is what we all truly are, consciousness itself. Hundreds of streams is phenomena. Phenomena is the word we use. Phenomena, the arising of phenomena. Form, we could say. What is the one flavor? Everything becomes one flavor. You already know what the one flavor is. It's the only thing you know. It's this. It's this is the one flavor, right? Life, death. is the one flavor. Practice enlightenment is the one flavor. Exhale, inhale is the one flavor. Sadness, joy. It's just the flavor of your life. One flavor. One flavor. Moment. It contains all other moments, all things, accepting all streams. So accepting is the choice. That's the word. That's the key for us in this first sentence. That's the important word. It is a choice until it is not a choice. And I would invite you, when you are doing meditation, or when you're in traffic, or when you're cutting carrots to make a soup, to notice the stream that's arising, to notice the thing that wants to come in, or the thing that wants to show up, and to notice where the line is of acceptance. Notice where your yes is, and notice where your no is. Does that make sense? That's your boundary. That's the edge of your capacity. There's no judgment about that. I'm not asking you to find a limitation and criticize yourself. That is the opposite of what I'm saying. I'm saying notice the growing edge right at the edge where it's hot and a little uncomfortable. This is how much I can hold. This is how much I can allow myself to feel. Notice that edge. Right? Do you feel how generative that place is? This is your edge. This is the part where you get to get bigger and hold a little more, care a little more. Right? Compassion. And to see it, to recognize it, there it is, wisdom. Wisdom, compassion, Buddha. There it is. What's the stream I can't accept? Just notice it. Just notice it. Okay. Freely going ahead, he says, is like the great surging tides riding on the wind, all coming onto this shore together. Whew. Have you guys had zazen like that? For those of you listening at home, they all nodded their heads. Yes, they have, because you sat down and you crossed your legs and you wanted to rise above your troubles in the meditation lounge, because who doesn't? But instead, you got great surging tides you did not sign up for. Right? Whoosh, great surging tides. The insecurity about that decision you made concerning your daughter's education. Why won't it go away? Why is it still showing up? The breakup you had 15 years ago. Bang, there it is, like it happened 5 minutes ago. You start sweating. Why? Right? The person sitting next to you is breathing too loud, and it isn't just a mild irritant, it's really pissing you off. Why? This is real, right? There's a great surging tide there. What's happening right now? What's happening right now in your consciousness? What's going on, right? Are we curious? Do we want to investigate that? Do we want to know more? Hey, what's going on? This is phenomena. This is mind-watching mind, right? This is what zazen is. It's funny we call it just resting, right? Wow, these great surging tides. But you kind of get the invitation here, freely going ahead can't happen unless I know what's happening. I can't just turn to you and go, stop breathing so loud, you're driving me crazy, bonk. There's nothing free about that. I don't even know what I'm angry about. I don't even know what this reminds me of. I don't even know what's happening in my consciousness right now. Do you feel it? I'm not free at all. I'm just reacting, trying to protect myself, There's no freedom there at all. He wants you to go freely move ahead. So we have to sit with the surging tides. Wow. They all come onto the shore together. You are the shore. Your zazen is the shore. Your life is the shore. Watching it show up. Whoosh, here's this color. Here's this sound. Here's this sensation. Cloth against my skin. Old memory coming. Song lyrics. Car going by outside. Right? You're on the shore all the time. Experience crashing onto your shore over and over and over. And the assignment of the shore is to say yes to every one of those waves. The assignment of the great ocean is to say yes to every one of those streams coming in. What ocean says no to a stream? Impossible. Accepts all of them. Do you feel the freedom in that? And then, because you have a sense of that, do you then notice the places where you aren't free? That's our job, right? This is meditation practitioner life. Notice where the rocks dam up the stream. Because we all do. All of us. All of the time. First noble truth. Do you get it? There's no judgment here. It's just noticing, oh, that's where I get constricted. That's the one I fight. What is that about? How can I make friends with that? How can I understand it more fully? Right? This tradition refuses to allow us to make an enemy of anything. It's our first precept, don't kill. That means don't kill anger, don't kill judgment, don't kill hate when it shows up. You have to cure it. You have to understand it. You have to love it. You don't just amputate it. You can't. Or you're creating more suffering. Right? This is a tradition of compassion and wisdom. Not a tradition of figuring out what the bad thing is and killing it. Right? We're the antithesis of that. So when it shows up in Zazen, oh, here's a great surging tide. Here's a stream. Oh, this one pushes me. This one burns. What do I do with this one? Wow. The ocean recognizes itself as all of this. So if I am the great ocean, and if you are the great ocean, the invitation of the great ocean always is, can you understand and hold and accept every piece of you? The lovely, big, inspiring waves with the white crests that we take photos of. The freely migrating mother whales and their calves. And the deep, dark recesses that are so cold you can't feel your skin. And the parts that are polluted and stagnant. The parts I want to own and have you see. And the parts I want to deny and have you never see. That's a pretty high bar for us, isn't it? It's very difficult for us to accept the darker parts of ourselves, the colder parts of ourselves, the polluted, hurting parts of ourselves. But if this tradition is about compassion and wisdom, that's exactly what we're here to do. Wow. How could they not reach into the genuine source, he asks. How could they not realize the great function that appears before us? I just think he's so optimistic. This to me, because he's just like, you can't miss it. This is your life. That's the one flavor. This is the thing. The thing you're tasting now, that's it. Like, you literally can't miss this. I'm cranky. Yeah, that's the flavor. It includes cranky. It includes cranky. Are you watching cranky? Do you notice how it's changing right now? Like, during the course of this sentence, it's changing. Do you see? There's the one flavor. Oh my God, just notice it. Are you curious about it? Do you care? Can you get closer to it? This is it. This is it. This is it. You can't miss it. How could you miss it? Yeah. How could you not realize the great function? And yet realize is a big word for us in Zen. Realization. To bring something into realization. What does that mean? It just means everything we've just talked about. Everything you already know. It's the moment when you become aware of it. Oh, I see. Right? The function of Zazen. To just shine the light of awareness on the thing that's suffering. Oh, I see you. This is the thing that happens when somebody breathes really loud. I know what this is about. This reminds me of da-da-da-da-da. Here's the feeling that I'm having. This is what it reminds me of. Here's the karma around that. I understand. I see it. Right? The light goes on. Ta-da! That's all it is. Just the light goes on. The light went on. The light went on. That's it. I just realized it. Right. I see it. Do you see, like, that's the crucial moment? That's what meditation is. That's what Zazen is. Instead of just being reactive, I'm suddenly aware that I'm reactive. That changes everything. Because now I have choice. Now I have choice. Right? There's my opportunity for acceptance. Right? I can accept and go, oh, I know what this is. I get it. Now, there's two things happening, right? There's the rrrrrrrr that's happening. That's Chinese for difficulty. Or not. But that's the first thing happening. There's my reactivity, right? There's my defense. I don't want to have this. I don't like it. And then there's a part of me that goes, oh, right. This is me doing the thing. I'm creating suffering right now. This is what the Buddha talked about. This is it. I'm doing it. Like, right now, I'm aware. Do you feel it? There's a moment of realization. Wow, I'm watching it. I'm watching it. Do you feel the freedom in that watcher? It's just observation. Oh, you're doing that thing you do that hurts you. I'm disidentified with that, and I have choice. Wow, that is a huge moment. That's the whole point of meditation. That is the whole point of meditation. To have that light go on and go, oh, I see it. I see it. Do you feel the agency in that moment? I've got agency now, man. I can make a choice. Yes. Wow. Pissed off in traffic again. But aware. and I know what this is about. Wow, I've got something to investigate, right? Suffering has shown itself to me, and I get to go, oh, I wonder what you're about. What's going on? Are you hurting? Tell me your story. I believe you, right? I believe that feeling. You're irritated. I believe that feeling. Tell me more about that. What is that about? I know if I investigate you, I'll figure out something really, really important. And this whole illusion about the jerk who cut me off is going to go out the window, and I'm going to learn something more. Wow, do you feel what a brave choice that is? That's a pretty evolutionarily advanced choice, too, isn't it? Instead of just a world of pleasant, unpleasant, friends, enemies, things I want, things I don't want, there's something else going on. The spirit of kind inquiry. What's happening? I want to know more about how you're suffering. Wow, how do we not realize the great function? So, we can't miss the source. All connected to us. All us, all me, all you, source. No source. Only moment, only this. No moment, no this. Zen has an abiding faith that there is only complete revelation at all times. That reality never holds any of itself back ever. There's only complete revelation at all times. So to have the light come on and just see a suffering moment, a suffering being, and to choose to meet that suffering moment and that suffering being with some kindness is the activity of enlightenment. It's the activity of love. And because of what Buddhism teaches us about interconnectedness, in the interpenetration of all phenomena, that moment of meeting suffering with kindness changes the universe. And not in an abstract way. In an absolutely literal way. It changes every single thing. It can't not. So a patch-robed monk, which is just to say a meditation practitioner, follows movement and responds to changes in total harmony. Ooh, I don't know. That's a tough one. It's the moment, though, of acceptance is when we move into harmony. The implication is that we respond with ease and that we can learn to respond with ease to the changing circumstances inside of us, and that we can learn to respond with ease to the changing circumstances outside of us. And the important implication is that we're responding to what is, not to what we wish was. I think that's the hard part for us. It certainly is the hard part for me. When we stop fighting, we're in harmony. I'm not talking about comfort, although that might be, might not. When I'm acting in accord with what is, I'm acting in accord with what is. Do you sort of feel the harmony there? There's a yes to that. I will dance with this thing that is actually happening within me, without me. I will accept the stream. And harmony is a great word. Tygen Layton, the Western teacher, the American Soto Zen priest who translated this work, used the word harmony. Nevertheless, I investigated the word harmony in our language because sometimes when a word is translated, the different implications of the word in the two languages can help inform one another. Does that make sense? It can also obscure sometimes. For those of you who are really academics, I am not. So sometimes I can actually learn more about the implication. So harmony in our language is a fascinating word. The Latin harmonia means concord, and concord means together, heart. Con is together, and cor comes from the French heart. Together, heart. Come on, you guys, isn't that awesome? Together, heart. That's awesome. Together, heart. When you put your heart into, when you say yes, when that says yes to the stream, you are acting in accord with what is, and I think the word heart there is so important. In Zen we say shin, comes from the Japanese shin and then Chinese, and it means heart, but it also means mind, and we sometimes translate it as mind. We sometimes translate it as mind with a capital M, meaning like consciousness itself. We sometimes translate it as heart, the heart sutra, the shin sutra. We don't say the mind sutra, we could. Because our language is different in the way that it works with these concepts. But together heart, something that helps make us more whole, something that makes this individual human heart in accord with the great heart. Does that make sense? Does that sort of feel like an ocean saying, yes, I will accept you, stream, come in? Does that feel that way to you? That's how it feels to me. Together heart. Harmony. Together heart. Wow. So we're getting close to the end here. Moreover, he says, haven't you yourself established the mind that thinks up all the illusory conditions? This insight must be perfectly incorporated. He's making an assumption about his audience. I will make the same about my audience this morning. Haven't you yourself already established the mind that thinks up all the illusory conditions? He's just saying you've already figured that out, right? I mean, you've already figured out the fact that you're the one who makes up all the stuff that hurts you. You know that, right? It's not outside of you. I mean, you know that, right? Like, that's you. Like, you're the one causing that, right? We're back to my famous traffic jam example. Traffic jams don't hurt. Sorry. I know you keep insisting that they do, but they don't. Cars in a line doesn't hurt. It's all that's happened. You make it hurt because you don't want it. And you want it to be different, and you are saying no, and it hurts. And the more you say no, the more it hurts. And the more you say yes, the less it hurts. So he's making the assumption that you already see how the illusion is the thing you are making, and that it hurts you. You know that, right? Do you see that you are doing that? There's your moment of not accepting. There's your moment of not being the great ocean, but being a separate, smaller ocean that goes, na 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 na. That's about as much of you as I can handle today, Mississippi River. Thank you very much. Go back to Ely. Or Itasca. Itasca. Do you get it? Haven't you yourself? He's giving the power, though, back to you. You've already figured this out. You know this. You already know this. Come on. Sit up. You know this. Straighten your crown. You're the one who keeps thinking up illusory conditions that hurt. Guess what else you have the power to do? Stop doing that. Do something different. This insight must be perfectly incorporated, and that's where he leaves us. And that's a very high bar. It's an incredibly high bar. He's basically saying, everything you just heard me say, you have got to perfectly incorporate that. And here's what I love about the word incorporate. I don't know, the Chinese, the Taigen translated to incorporate, but incorporate to me feels different than understand. He isn't like, this is another teaching you got to memorize. Please be able to recite this when asked. He wants you to incorporate. That to me feels physical. Right? You know how you know how to digest a sandwich? No, you don't. You have no idea how to digest a sandwich. You do it all the time, but you don't know how to digest a sandwich. Your body knows how. It incorporated that. You figured that out a long time ago. You just didn't figure out. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Right. He's talking about this has got to be in your cells. The great ocean accepting all streams at some point has to be this is now the default setting. The kind witness that shows up and says, I see that you are struggling. I trust your feeling. Come closer to me and tell me more. That has to become the default setting. And at the beginning, it doesn't feel like the default, you guys. It's something we forget is even there, right? Because we're new at this practice. And by new, I mean the first 50 years. The party that remembers, oh, right, maybe I could behold this circumstance with kindness. Maybe there's part of my consciousness that would be able to say yes to this. Maybe that wise mind Buddha nature thing that they talk about at the Zen Center is real, and maybe there's some part of me that could go, oh my God, I see that you're struggling. What is happening right now? I see that you're looking at the sunset with awe and reverence. What's happening right now? I can see that you really, really don't want to put away your motorcycle for the year. I can see that you can hardly wait to call your dad on his birthday. I can see that you're still scared of snakes, even though you haven't been bit by one in 30 years. Do you understand what I'm talking about? The part of you that watches, the part of you that absorbs this stuff and just says yes, 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 that doesn't fight, the part of you that already is the ocean that says, I'm not fighting with you, come on in, come on in, come on in, stream. You can do it or you wouldn't be here. Of course you can do it. Of course you can do it. There isn't anybody who isn't a patchwork monk, right? This is our inheritance as human beings. awakeness. It's what we are. It's what we are. It isn't a Buddhist thing. It's a human thing. We are awakeness. We are self-aware. We know we were born, and we know we're going to die. And we know this whole thing is going, going, gone. And we have a chance while we're here to see it for what it is and say yes and love it. And that's a choice. And we all get to make it. We all get to make it. Wow. That is the invitation of that black cushion, or of those chairs, or of verses like this, or of your favorite song, or of your favorite poem, or of the sparkle in your grandma's eye, or whatever the thing is that moves you. Some little part of you just says, grow, grow, grow. Don't miss this. Don't miss this. Don't say no to this stream. It's telling you something really important. Please don't say no. You might not get another chance. Wake up, please. So this is embodied practice, folks. Embodied, embodied, embodied. It's not the idea of practice. It's practice. Embodied, embodied. One flavor. I am so grateful that the sky doesn't say no to tornadoes. It is not my preference to have tornadoes, but I'm glad that the sky has no problem saying hello, rain. Hello, humidity. Hello, sun. Hello, clouds. Hello, no clouds. I am so grateful that the ocean says, come on in, little tiny stream that I don't even notice. Come on in, large one. Come on in, pollution. Come on in, clear water. I will say yes to all of you. My compassion, my acceptance has no boundary. I will always say yes to you. Tell me that that is not what you most truly want. Is for somebody to look at you so deeply that they see every last bit, all the dark stuff, and they still say yes. I accept you. I accept you. That's what every human being wants. The invitation of this tradition is to become that. That's exactly what we do when we are just resting. Wow. Okay, so I'm going to close with Rumi. A different voice. You guys know Rumi, right? Oh, they all nodded. We are the mirror, as well as the face in it. We are tasting this moment, the taste of eternity. We are pain and what cures pain. We are the sweet, cold water, and we are the jar that pours. Only this ancient love circling the holy black stone of nothing. Where the lover is the beloved, the horizon, and everything within it. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time and your attention. And we have a few minutes. If you would like to offer a question or comment or alternative interpretation of the resting of the streams and tides, what you got today? Ashley.
I was that for an instructional, I just loved his use of language, like, in the first sentence, I love the use of flavor, the incorporated, a pack of pet rose monk. I just love that he it wasn't so, do this. Step one, this is what you do. Step two, here's, experience. Step three. So he I just felt like he was really thoughtful in, his use of language. That's what I loved about him.
Me too. Do other people dig that? You're right, it's not very didactic, isn't it? You guys know Fukan Zazengi Dogen's instructions on zazen. It's much more like, first do this, arrange your robes, da-da-da-da, form the little mudra with your paws, and then sit up straight, and na-na-na-na-na. This is more like poetry, don't you think, actually? It's almost like poetry, yeah. I like the freedom implied there. Maybe that's why I keep coming back to this all the time. Please.
I have a question about this.
Sure.
I used to work at a mental health facility many years ago, and one of the descriptions of a schizophrenic is that they don't filter.
Yeah.
And they are overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And actually, I found that they remarkably intelligent people, they did absolutely insane things. So I imagine letting all these things wash over me, and then how do I step one foot out the door?
Yeah. What a great question. I'll just be really practical. I think that's probably the place to take it today, just because of time. Did you guys hear what she said? The no filter, the no boundary idea can become pathological. Actually, it can cause us suffering. Again, I think I actually think about this with some frequency, only because I think one of the shared. I guess I'll say it this way. I don't want to make assumptions. When I first came to Zen practice, I don't know, whatever it was, 25 years ago or something like that, no one told me this, but I somehow got the impression that, like, this, like, spiritual practice, whether it's Zen or not, spiritual practice should be able to address and transform all the difficulties in my life, full stop. Does that make sense? Like, it should have the ability to basically solve kind of everything. And because I was a Zen guy, I was really drawn to this tradition, to Soto Zen, and all they ever taught me was Zazen, the one, we only have one crayon in our box, meditation-wise, right? There are lots of other crayons in the Buddhist box, but strictly speaking, Soto Zen's like, just sit. That's what we got. Don't you guys do Tong, Len, and meditate? No, not really. I mean, we're starting to now, as America's blurring these traditions together, and we're starting to have more kind of a pan-Buddhism. But anyway, there's only kind of one, the one thing, and increasingly coming up against the one thing not being the medicine that I needed. And learning about other people who, though, that was not the medicine that they needed. Sit and face the wall in silence. Yeah, that's pretty good if you've already got a pretty stable ego. You're relatively healthy. Does that make sense? Your suffering on a scale of 1 to 10 isn't bigger than like a 7. Just sitting with it and allowing everything to enter would really be stretching that boundary. It would be brilliant, right? That would be brilliant spiritual practice. But if I'm off of that spectrum, if I don't, if my depression, my anxiety, my mental state is such that I actually don't have a filter built in, and I don't have a stable ego to rest on, and I don't have a safety valve, a place I can go, okay, enough of that. Does that make sense? Then this is not a good practice. And even the teaching of, like, boundarylessness is a crucially important teaching. In Zen, we hit this emptiness, boundarylessness, no self, no gap, one flavor thing all the time. But again, the assumption is if you're coming to such an advanced teaching, you've already got all these other ducks in a row, including your relatively healthy, strong, stable ego. You can punch out when you need to. I think that's kind of one of the shared assumptions, because I think it can be dangerous. And the teaching, even the ideas of emptiness, historically, a lot of us know this, have been horribly misused in the Zen tradition. If you take a teaching like that outside of its tradition, especially outside of the context of compassion, and start teaching people, there's no self, there's no other, there is nothing. Does that make sense? I mean, that you can almost feel the anxiety. Some people are going to experience that as terrifying and not liberating, you know, and it can be used to justify morally reprehensible behavior, because there's no life and no death. Bang. Nothing just happened. Does that make sense? Anyway, I'm getting a little, I'm riffing here because this is a big one for me. Yeah, the no boundary thing is a wonderful, to me, the no boundary thing is a wonderful piece of medicine when I am suffering and caught by the idea of boundary. It becomes the appropriate medicine. I'm really caught and I'm really constricted and I'm really suffering because I so believe in and reify the distance. And then the teaching of there is no distance can liberate me. But I actually think for somebody else in a position of no boundary, and especially experiencing that as fear and violation and anxiety, the teaching of form, this is form and emptiness I'm talking about for you guys who know Heart Sutra, you know, form and emptiness, to teach the teaching of separation, boundary, right, edge, and then that can create safety. It's stages of development, kind of. If you're a little tiny kid, the no boundary thing would be completely terrifying, right? We have to know where the safety is. We have to know where the edge is. We have to know where the line is. We have to know where the boundary is. That's really, really important. And Zen really is a tradition that comes to us from China, and it already makes a bunch of assumptions. You're already a grown adult. You got a good ego. You already know all of basic Buddhism. You already understand the precepts. You already got the Four Noble Truths down. You've got all the basic stuff and you're ready for the really advanced. This is some pretty serious medicine. Does that make sense? So to apply that to every person in every case would be wildly irresponsible in my eyes. Is that helpful? Am I addressing your... Because you're right, boundarylessness, I think for a lot of us, can be liberative and feel ventilating and freeing. But even as I'm looking around the room seeing your faces, there's no boundary. You know, about half of you are like, right? So what do the Tibetans say? See Buddha and everyone, and keep your hand on your wallet. No boundary, healthy boundary. You get it? the practicality. Anything else before we shift gears here? Bernie.
I don't have any point to this, but what hit me reading it was, moreover, haven't you yourself established the mind that thinks of all the illusory connections? And then I have to ask myself the question, who is the you that created the illusory conditions? Is that itself an illusory connection?
Oh, well, Bernie, you've been hanging out at Zen Center too long. Because that's a crazy question. It's also a great question. What do you think? Good answer. Seriously, I'm being dead serious. That's a great answer. He just shook his head and I don't know. That's a great answer. Yeah, that's a great answer. I love that. I don't either. I don't know either. I would be deeply terrified of anybody who thought they didn't know. Like, ooh, you might not want to be so certain about that. Thank you for that. All right. I've got to hand things over to the Doan, so I will address that rascal in the corner on the porch. It's good to see you, guy. Please.